Chapter 10, Prayer, Meditation, and Religious Practices. Faith, Confidence, and Devotion. Right understanding points the way to confidence. Confidence paves the way to wisdom. Faith, in the deistic sense, is not found in Buddhism because of its emphasis on understanding. Deistic faith is a drug for the emotional mind and demands belief in things which cannot be known. Knowledge destroys faith, and faith destroys itself when a mysterious belief is examined under the daylight of reason. Confidence cannot be obtained by faith since it places less emphasis on reason, but only by understanding. Referring to the unintelligible and blind nature of faith, Voltaire said, "Faith is to believe in something which your reason tells you cannot be true. For if your reason approved of it, there could be no question of blind faith." Confidence, however, is not the same as faith. For confidence is not a mental acceptance of that which cannot be known. Confidence is an assured expectation, not of an unknown beyond, but of what can be tested as experienced and understood personally. Confidence is like the understanding that a student has in his teacher who explains in the classroom the inverse square law of gravitation, as stated by Newton. He should not adopt an unquestioning belief of his teacher and his textbook. He studies the facts, examines the scientific arguments, and makes an assessment of the reliability of the information. If he has doubts, he should reserve his judgment until such time as when he is able to investigate the accuracy of the information for himself. To a Buddhist, confidence is a product of reason, knowledge, and experience. When it is developed, confidence can never be blind faith. Confidence becomes a power of the mind. In his book, What the Buddha Taught, Wapola Rahula says, "The question of belief arises when there is no seeing. Seeing in every sense of the word. The moment you see, the question of belief disappears. If I tell you that I have a gem hidden in the folded palm of my hand, the question of belief arises because you do not see it for yourself. But if I unclench my fist and show you the gem, then you see it for yourself, and the question of belief does not arise." So, the phrase in ancient Buddhist texts reads, "Realizing as one sees a gem or a myrobalan fruit in the palm." The meaning of prayer. Nature is impartial. It cannot be flattered by prayers. It does not grant any special favors on request. Man is not a fallen creature who begs for his needs as he awaits mercy. According to Buddhism, man is a potential master of himself. Only because of his deep ignorance does man fail to realize his full potential. Since the Buddha has shown this hidden power, man must cultivate his mind and try to develop it by realizing his innate ability. Buddhism gives full responsibility and dignity to man. It makes man his own master. According to Buddhism, no higher being sits in judgment over his affairs and destiny. That is to say, our life, our society, our world is what you and I want to make of it, and not what some other unknown being wants it to be. Remember, the nature is impartial. It cannot be flattered by prayers. Nature does not grant any special favors on request. Thus, in Buddhism, prayer is meditation, which has self-change as its object. Prayer in meditation is the reconditioning of one's nature. It is the transforming of one's inner nature accomplished by the purification of the three faculties, thought, word, and deed. Through meditation, we can understand that we become what we think, in accordance with the discoveries of psychology. When we pray, we experience some relief in our minds, that is, the psychological effect that we have created through faith and devotion. After reciting certain verses, we also experience the same result. Religious names or symbols are important to the extent that they help to develop devotion and confidence. The Buddha himself has clearly expressed that neither the recital of holy scriptures, nor self-torture, nor sleeping on the ground, nor the repetition of prayers, penance, hymns, charms, mantras, incantations, and invocations can bring the real happiness of Nibbana. Regarding the use of prayers for attaining the final goal, the Buddha once made an analogy of a man who wants to cross a river. If he sits down and prays, imploring that the fair bank of the river will come to him and carry him across, then his prayer will not be answered. If he really wants to cross the river, he must make some effort. He must find some log and build a raft, or look for a bridge, or construct a boat, or perhaps swim. Somehow, he must work to get across the river. Likewise, if he wants to cross the river of samsara, prayers alone are not enough. He must work hard by living a religious life, by controlling his passion, calming his mind, and by getting rid of all the impurities and defilements in his mind. Only then can he reach the final goal. Prayer alone will never take him to the final goal. If prayer is necessary, it should be to strengthen the mind and not to beg for gains. The following prayer of a well-known poet teaches us how to pray. Buddhists will regard this as meditation to cultivate the mind. Let me not pray to be sheltered from danger, but to be fearless in facing them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it. Let me not crave in anxious fear to be saved, but for the patience to win my freedom. Meditation. Meditation is a psychological approach to mental culture, training, and purification. In place of prayer, Buddhists practice meditation for mental culture and for spiritual development. No one can attain Nibbana or salvation without developing the mind through meditation. Any amount of meritorious deeds alone will not lead a person to attain the final goal without the corresponding mental purification. Naturally, the untrained mind is very elusive and persuades people to commit evil and become slaves of the senses. Imagination and emotions always mislead man if his mind is not properly trained. One who knows how to practice meditation will be able to control one's mind when it is misled by the senses. Most of the troubles which we are confronting today are due to the untrained and uncultured mind. It is already established that meditation is a remedy for many physical and mental sickness. Medical authorities and great psychologists the world over say that mental frustration, worries, miseries, anxieties, tension, and fear are the causes of many diseases. Stomach ulcers, gastritis, nervous complaints, and mental sickness. And even latent sickness will be aggravated through such mental conditions. When the conscious I frets too much, worries too much, or grieves too long and too intensely, then troubles develop in the body. Gastric ulcers, tuberculosis, coronary diseases, and a host of functional disorders are the products of mental and emotional imbalance. In the case of children, the decay of teeth and defective eyesight are frequently related to emotional disorders. Many of these sicknesses and disorders can be avoided if people could spend a few minutes a day to calm their senses through the practice of meditation. Many people do not believe this or are too lazy to practice meditation owing to lack of understanding. Some people say that meditation is only a waste of time. We must remember that every spiritual master in this world attained the highest point of his life through the practice of meditation. They are honored today by millions of people because they have done tremendous service to mankind with the supreme knowledge and patience which they obtained through the practice of meditation. Meditation should not be a task to which we force ourselves with gritted teeth and clenched fists. It should rather be something that draws us because it fills us with joy and inspiration. So long as we have to force ourselves, we are not yet ready for meditation. Instead of meditating, we are violating our true nature. Instead of relaxing and letting go, we are holding on to our ego, to our willpower. In this way, meditation becomes a game of ambition, of personal achievement, and aggrandizement. Meditation is like love, a spontaneous experience, not something that can be forced or acquired by strenuous effort. Therefore, Buddhist meditation has no other purpose than to bring the mind back into the present, into the state of fully awakened consciousness, by clearing it from all obstacles that have been created by habit or tradition. The Buddha obtained his enlightenment through the development of his mind. He did not seek divine power to help him. He gained his wisdom through self-effort by practicing meditation. To have a healthy body and mind, and to have peace in life, one must learn how to practice meditation. Nature of modern life. Today, we are living in a world where people have to work very hard physically and mentally. Without hard work, there is no place for people in the modern society. Very often, keen competition is going on everywhere. One is trying to beat the other in every sphere of life, and man has no rest at all. Mind is the nucleus of life. When there is no real peace and rest in the mind, the whole life will collapse. People naturally try to overcome their miseries through pleasing the senses. They drink, gamble, sing and dance, all the time having the illusion that they are enjoying the real happiness of life. Sense stimulation is not the real way to have relaxation. The more we try to please the senses through sensual pleasures, the more we will become slaves to the senses. There will be no end to our craving for satisfaction. The real way to relax is to calm the senses by the control of mind. If we can control the mind, then we will be able to control everything. When the mind is free from mental disturbances, it can see many things which others cannot see with their naked eyes. Ultimately, we will be able to attain our salvation and find peace and happiness. To practice meditation, one must have strong determination, effort, and patience. Immediate results cannot be expected. We must remember that it takes many years for a person to be qualified as a doctor, lawyer, mathematician, philosopher, historian, or a scientist. Similarly, to be a good meditator, it will take some time for the person to control the elusive mind and to calm the senses. Practicing meditation is like swimming in a river against the current. Therefore, one must not lose patience for not being able to obtain rapid results. At the same time, the meditator must also cultivate his morality. A congenial place for meditation is another important aspect. The meditator must have an object for his meditation, but without an object, the jumping mind is not easy to trap. The object must not create lust, anger, delusion, and emotion in the meditator's mind. When we start to meditate, we switch the mind from the old imaginative way of thinking, or habitual thought, into a new, unimpeded, or unusual way of thinking. While meditating, when we breathe in mindfully, we absorb cosmic energy. When we breathe out mindfully, with metta, loving kindness, we purify the atmosphere. intellect is necessary for the overcoming of emotionality and spiritual confusion, as intuition is necessary for overcoming intellectual limitation and conceptual abstraction. We spend most of our time on our body to feed it, to clothe it, to cleanse it, to wash it, to beautify it, to relax it. But how much time do we spend on our mind for the same purposes? Some people take the Buddha image as an object and concentrate on it. Some concentrate on inhaling and exhaling. Whatever may be the method, if anyone tries to practice meditation, he is sure to find relaxation. Meditation will help him a great deal to have physical and mental health, and to control the mind when it is necessary. Man can do the highest service to the society by simply abstaining from evils. The cultured mind that is developed through meditation performs a most useful service to others. Meditation is not simply a waste of man's valuable time. The advanced mind of a meditator can solve so many human problems and is very useful to enlighten others. Meditation is very useful to help a person live peacefully despite various disturbances that are so prevalent in this modern world. We cannot be expected to retire to a jungle or forest to live in ivory towers, far from the maddening crowd. By practicing right meditation, we can have an abode for temporary oblivion. Meditation has the purpose of training a person to face, understand, and conquer this very world in which we live. Meditation teaches us to adjust ourselves to bear with the numerous obstacles to life in the modern world. Some people practice meditation in order to satisfy their material desires. They want to further their material gains. They want to use meditation to get better jobs. They want to earn more money or to operate their business more efficiently. Perhaps they fail to understand that the aim of meditation is not to increase, but to decrease desires. Materialistic motives are hardly suitable for proper meditation, the goal of which lies beyond worldly affairs. One should meditate to try to attain something that even money cannot buy or bring. If you practice meditation, you can learn to behave like a gentleman even though you are disturbed by others. Through meditation, you can learn how to relax the body and to calm the mind. You can learn to be tranquil and happy within. Just as an engine gets overheated and damaged when it is run for a prolonged period and requires cooling down to overcome this, so also the mind gets overtaxed when we subject it to a sustained degree of mental effort. And it is only through meditation that relaxation or cooling can be achieved. Meditation strengthens the mind to control human emotion when it is disturbed by negative thoughts and feelings such as jealousy, anger, pride, and envy. If you practice meditation, you can learn to make the proper decision when you are at the crossroads in life and are at a loss as to which way to turn. These qualities cannot be purchased from anywhere. No amount of money or property can buy these qualities. Yet you attain them through meditation. And finally, the ultimate object of Buddhist meditation is to eradicate all defilements from the mind and to attain the final goal, nirvana. Nowadays, however, the practice of meditation has been abused by people. They want immediate and quick results, just as they expect quick returns for everything they do in daily life. In Buddhism, as is the case with other Eastern cultures, patience is a most important quality. The mind must be brought under control in slow degrees, and one should not try to reach for the higher states without proper training. We have heard of over-enthusiastic young men and women literally going out of their minds because they adopted the wrong attitude towards meditation. Meditation is a gentle way of conquering the defilements which pollute the mind. If people want success or achievement to boast to others that they have attained this or that level of meditation, they are abusing the method of mental culture. One must be trained in morality, and one must clearly understand that to be successful in the discipline of meditation, worldly achievement must not be equated with spiritual development. Ideally, it is good to work under an experienced teacher who will help his student to develop along the right path. But above all, one must never be in a hurry to achieve too much too quickly. The significance of Paritta chanting. Paritta chanting is the recital of some of the sutras uttered by the Buddha in the Pali language for the blessing and protection of the devotees. Paritta chanting, or sutra chanting, is a well-known Buddhist practice conducted all over the world, especially in Theravada Buddhist countries, where the Pali language is used for recitals. Many of these are important sutras from the basic teachings of the Buddha, which were selected by his disciples. Originally, these sutras were recorded on ola, leaves, about 2,000 years ago. Later, they were compiled into a book known as the Paritta Chanting Book. The names of the original books from which these sutras were selected are the Anguttara Nikaya, Majjhima Nikaya, Digha Nikaya, Samyutta Nikaya, and Kudaka Nikaya in the Sutra Pitaka. The sutras that Buddhists recite for protection are known as Paritta chanting. Here, protection means shielding ourselves from various forms of evil spirits, misfortune, sickness, and influence of the planetary systems, as well as instilling confidence in the mind. The vibrant sound of the chanting creates a very pleasing atmosphere in the vicinity. The rhythm of the chanting is also important. One might have noticed that when monks recite these sutras, different intonations are adopted to harmonize with different sutras intended for different quarters. It was found very early during man's spiritual development that certain rhythms of the human voice could produce significant psychological states of peacefulness and serenity in the minds of ardent listeners. Furthermore, intonation at certain levels would appeal to devas, while a certain rhythms would create a good influence over lower beings like animals, snakes, or even spirits or ghosts. Therefore, a soothing and correct rhythm is an important aspect of Paritta chanting. The use of these rhythms is not confined to Buddhism alone. In every religion, when the followers recite their prayers by using the holy books, they follow certain rhythms. We can observe this when we listen to Quran reading by Muslims and the Veda mantra chanting by Hindu priests in the Sanskrit language. Some lovely chanting is also carried out by certain Christian groups, especially the Roman Catholic and Greek Orthodox sects. When the sutras are chanted, three great and powerful forces are activated. These are the forces of the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Buddhism is the combination of these three jewels, and when invoked together, they can bring great blessing to mankind. The Buddha. He had cultivated all the great virtues, wisdom, and enlightenment, developed his spiritual power, and gave us his noble teachings. Even though the physical presence of the teacher is no more with us, his teachings have remained for the benefit of mankind. Similarly, the man who discovered electricity is no more with us, yet by using his knowledge, the effect of his wisdom still remains. The illumination that we enjoy today is the result of his wisdom. The scientists who discovered atomic energy are no longer living, but the knowledge to use it remains with us. Likewise, the noble teachings given us through the Buddha's wisdom and enlightenment are a most effective power for people to draw inspiration from. When you remember him and respect him, you develop confidence in him. When you recite or listen to the words uttered by him, you invoke the power of his blessings. The Dhamma. It is the power of truth, justice, and peace discovered by the Buddha which provides spiritual solace for devotees to maintain peace and happiness. When you develop your compassion, devotion, and understanding, this power of the Dhamma protects you and helps you to develop more confidence and strength in your mind. Then your mind itself becomes a very powerful force for your own protection. When it is known that you uphold the Dhamma, people and other beings will respect you. The power of Dhamma protects you from various kinds of bad influence and evil forces. Those who cannot understand the power of the Dhamma and how to live in accordance with the Dhamma invariably surrender themselves to all forms of superstitious beliefs and subject themselves to the influence of many kinds of gods, spirits, and mystical powers which require them to perform odd rites and rituals. By so doing, they only develop more fear and suspicion born out of ignorance. Large sums of money are spent on such practices, and this could be easily avoided if people were to develop their confidence in the Dhamma. Dhamma is also described as nature or natural phenomena and cosmic law. Those who have learned the nature of these forces can protect themselves through the Dhamma. When the mind is calmed through perfect knowledge, disturbances cannot create fear in the mind. The Sangha. It refers to the holy order of monks who have renounced their worldly life for their spiritual development. They are considered as disciples of the Buddha, who have cultivated great virtues to attain sainthood or arahanthood. We pay respect to the Sangha community as the custodians of the Buddha Sasana, or those who have protected and introduced the Dhamma to the world over the last 2,500 years. The services rendered by the Sangha community has guided mankind to lead a righteous and noble life. They are the living link with the Enlightened One, who bring his message to us through the recital of the words uttered by him. The chanting of sutras for blessing was started during the Buddha's time. Later, in certain Buddhist countries such as Sri Lanka, Thailand, and Burma, this practice was developed further by organizing prolonged chanting for one whole night or for several days. With great devotion, devotees participated in the chanting sessions by listening attentively and intelligently. There were some occasions when the Buddha and his disciples chanted sutras to bring spiritual solace to people suffering from epidemics, famines, sickness, and other natural disasters. On one occasion, when a child was reported to be affected by some evil influence, the Buddha instructed his monks to recite sutras to give protection to the child from the evil forces. The blessing service, by way of chanting, was effective. Of course, there were instances when the sutra chanting could not be effective if the victims had committed some strong bad karma. Nevertheless, certain minor bad karmic effects can be overcome by the vibrant power combined with the great virtues and compassions of those holy people who chant these sutras. Here, the overcoming of a bad karmic effect does not mean the complete eradication of the effect, but only a temporary suspension of such an effect. Devotees who were tired, fatigued, have experienced relief and calmness after listening to the chanting of sutras. Such an experience is different from that provided by music, because music can create excitement in our mind and pander to our emotions, but does not create spiritual devotion and confidence. For the last 2,500 years, Buddhist devotees have experienced the good effects of sutra chanting. We should try to understand how and why the words uttered by the Buddha for blessing purposes could be so effective even after his passing away. It is mentioned in the Buddha's teaching that ever since he had the aspiration to become a Buddha during his previous birth, he had strongly upheld one particular principle, namely, to abstain from telling lies. Without abusing or misusing his words, he spoke gently without hurting the feelings of others. The power of truth has become a source of strength in the words uttered by the Buddha with great compassion. However, the power of the Buddha's word alone is not enough to secure blessing without the devotion and understanding of the devotees. The miraculous effect experienced by many people in ridding themselves of their sickness and many other mental disturbances through the meditation of the Buddhist sutras enabled them to develop their faith and confidence in this form of religious service.